coming to you from the IL Podcast Studio in the Baltimore, Maryland worldwide headquarters of Inside Lacrosse. It's the D-Fly and Dixie Show, featuring Inside Lacrosse and Big Ten Network analyst and my friend, Mark Dixon. I'm your host, Dan Flynn. Dix, let's get it. Welcome to another week, Dix.
So we're friends.
Yes, we are.
Okay, I was just making sure.
Yeah. There probably aren't a lot of people who claim that willingly.
That's just hurtful. That is just really hurtful.
I'll cut this out of here.
What's the matter with
you? I'll cut this out. No, I won't. So it was a fun weekend of lacrosse action, Dix.
Very fun.
It seemed like there were some road teams, road underdogs, maybe even, who had some big wins this week. So in almost the last weekend for a lot of non-conference games, but we saw Hopkins go down to Virginia, get a big win. Syracuse went to Duke.
Well, before we dive into lacrosse, let's talk about the NCAA basketball tournament.
Yeah, this is another exciting weekend of that,
Are you okay?
Yeah, I'm fine.
I was a little worried about recording this podcast a day early, being on a Monday, you know, because we got busy schedules and things of that nature. I thought you would have the black glasses on and puffy eyes, red.
No.
The Duke Blue Devils going down.
They had their chances. Kansas played very well, made a lot of shots, and Duke didn't.
Yeah, I watched the last 5-6 minutes of that game. I thought the blocking call late in the game was trash.
Yeah, you texted me about that.
I thought that was awful. I thought that was really bad.
That was a bad call, and it really did change a lot of the game because Wendell Carter kind of anchors Duke's zone defense, and without him, they're not as good.
Mm-hmm.
Or anytime you lose a NBA lottery pick and he can't play, it hurts your team.
So he fouled out with that foul?
Yeah.
Oh, no
kidding. Is a tough one to foul a guy out on.
I was flipping between that and the PNC Invitational that was on tape delay that myself and Kevin Washburn called those games on Saturday evening.
I taped that. Watched a little bit of it last night.
Yeah, I had a really good time working with Evan. That's always a fun event. The high school kids really enjoy playing at Loyola and enjoy being on television. So that was a lot of fun. So I was flipping between the PNC Invitational
and
the basketball game because I was getting a lot of texts on the PNC game. People were like, "Oh, hey." I was like, "Wow, it's a tape delay game. Everybody already knew the results." I didn't think there would be a lot of people watching the game outside of parents and people interested in Notre Dame Prep, Roland Park Country School, who played in the girls' game, then Severn and Spalding, who played in the boys' game. I was getting a number of texts from people being like, "Hey, man, you sound great. This is great."
Everybody goes to the CW Baltimore to catch their local lacrosse action.
I think the games were after the Steve Harvey show.
Little big
got
shots.
Done, and then before
Judge Jimmy
Riverdale
or something.
Riverdale came on. So yeah, we got very familiar with the reads for CW programming.
I bet you did.
There's the Flash is on the CW.
My daughter asked to watch The Flash.
I've never watched that. And then there's a new show called Black Lightning. So The Flash and Black Lightning are like paired up. Yeah, it is a superhero type thing. And I think the read was like, whatever nights they're on is like, you know, Wednesdays are electric on the CW.
That's great copywriting.
And then Riverdale comes before a show called Life Sentence. So I don't know what they're all about.
So Riverdale, that's like the Archie and Jughead.
Yeah, and that Riverdale's available on Netflix. I pass that on Netflix whenever I'm making a selection.
What kids know about Archie?
I think it's a very updated.
It all has to be.
More hip, kind of edgy Archie. It's not, you know, I remember Archie, but I never read it. Or was it a cartoon? I know it was a comic book.
I know there was Archie, Jughead, and someone named Veronica, but I don't know anything else. That's all I know.
Did they meet at Mel's Diner, and it was Flo?
I think they had.
And Vera was one of the waitresses, and Mel was the owner.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, wait a minute. That might be a totally different program.
Yeah. No, they'd go to Arnold's.
They'd have a maintenance
man. And there was Arnold was a Japanese guy who would cook the hamburgers. Oh, no, that was Fonzie.
Wait a minute. So first of all,
apparently, when you were in high school, Dix, I got to ask you this. Because apparently, from all the TV we watched as kids, there had to be like a burger place that you just hung out in.
No.
Yeah, we didn't have that either. I don't know how they got
there
that.
There was.
Like,
so,
how did it become like a theme of all these sitcoms and cartoons?
Well, because
where
back in the
everyone
day.
Everyone had a burger joint.
Well,
to
because
hang out
back in the day, you used to go to the malt shop and the drive up, which we don't have anymore except Sonic. And I don't even know how Sonic works if you drive up and...
Like, I've never eaten at a Sonic.
Sonic is awesome.
I know so many people who go out of their way to find Sonics.
Yeah, well, you used to have to.
My brother Jim, my brother Mike, they go out of their way to find Sonics.
You used to have to go out of your way for Sonic, but now they're more... There's a myriad of Sonics.
Look at this. Dick's learning
One's on Route 40 right around the corner from our house in Ellicott City.
Oh, there's one over there?
Right up from the Enchanted Forest Shopping Center.
Okay.
So you have the Sonic there. But remember, back in the day, it was all about the cars and guys cruising on a Saturday night, and they would go to the burger place. And but I take exception to you making fun of Happy Days. I love Happy Days, too.
I was just saying that. In these,
so I was talking more about what was the TV show? It was called with Mel's Diner. That was Alice.
Alice.
And then I was going to say, was there a maintenance man named Schneider
coming over? That was one day at a time.
Yeah. And that was Valerie Bertinelli,
yeah.
right?
Mrs. Eddie Van Halen, the former Mrs. Eddie Van Halen.
Yeah,
that's true. Yeah. But her son is Wolfgang.
Wolfgang,
who's a mean bass player. Yeah, he replaced Michael Anthony.
So Van Halen went from David Lee Roth, Michael Anthony, Alex and Eddie Van Halen to Sam, then it became Van Hagar, Sammy Hagar. I love both. It depends on like what mood I'm in. Sometimes I like Van Hagar, sometimes I like Van Halen. But then I guess Michael Anthony and Sammy were really, really good friends. So Eddie kicked Sammy out. Then they got Gary Cherone. That was your favorite version of Van Halen.
Van Halen was my favorite band until that moment.
No, you hired. I remember.
They hired Gary Cherone.
What was he the singer of? Extreme. You were a big Extreme guy back in college.
I wasn't.
You used to walk around. I'll never forget when you played More Than Words at my graduation party. at one of the Hopkins basketball games. You were spinning the record. Because normally you play like, you know, OPP.
I play Public Enemy.
Public Enemy. And then all of a sudden you put on. And we're like, whoa, what's going on? Dan Flynn got sensitive all of a sudden. Loved you. And we're like, whoa. And you're like. Then you know, the crowd got quiet. I was like, you suck, Flynn.
And that was one of the referees of the game. It's like, this song, it's terrible.
But when Van Halen reunited, so they got Michael Anthony and Sammy Hagar got kicked out. They get David Lee back.
I ran into you and your wife at the chicken box.
At the Van Halen,
Van Halen play in Baltimore.
That was like 10 years ago.
Yeah.
That was awesome. What an awesome show.
And Wolfie was playing the bass.
Wolfie was on bass. And but what did David Lee say? He goes, this is three parts original and one part inevitable. He's got a way with words, that guy.
Three parts
original, one part inevitable. We're coming downtown near you. Van Halen, back together. And Eddie, like 2 seconds into when David Lee Roth opens his mouth, you could just see the disgust in his eyes. He's like, why did I let this guy play the music. Why did I let this guy back into the
band? Sells tickets. He fills arenas.
I tell you what, his voice stinks these days, too. Diamond Dave's voice is
It's hard to hit some of those high notes.
Big time. But Eddie looks great. He can still play and woofy. And Alex Van Halen's, like, I wonder if Alex is just like let's say he was just like really tight with Sammy Hagar and was like, and he's like, let's go, Alex, we're out of here. And he's like, man, not another friend I have to lose because you're such a wacko.
Anyway. The man can play the guitar though.
Oh, he's incredible.
You know, Alex is a pretty good drummer.
He's really good.
He is a really good drummer.
I mean, he doesn't get the credit, I think, as a lot of other hard rock drummers have, because Eddie's so good, and the band has been.
Michael Anthony is a good bass player. He's a great backup singer.
That was the biggest thing. Him and Eddie, the melodies and the harmonizing that they provided, especially when Diamond Dave was in the band. Like Michael Anthony, I don't think Wolfgang has that talent the way that Michael Anthony does. But
he sings more like Eddie.
Yeah, Eddie's a little rough, but no, man, Van Halen, great band, great band. How do we go from Riverdale and Archie to? That's the beauty of this podcast.
Go any which way.
All over the place. I love it.
So you were talking about how Eddie can still play. You know who can still play, Dix?
Who can still
play? The Johns Hopkins Blue Jays.
Okay, yes, great segue.
Do not rule them out, even if they're down 9-2 at halftime in Charlottesville. Big comeback. Explosion in the second half, really. Mm-hmm. Marr, 4 goals. Tinney had a couple of highlight reel goals.
Mm-hmm.
Cole Williams put him on his back for a couple of plays, and they overcome a 9-2 deficit to take a 15-13 win over number 10 Virginia. It's a big win for the Blue Jays as they head into Big Ten play.
And these this series has been defined by one goal games. I think even in the open for ESPNU, they showed clips of like the last four or five meetings, one goal or overtime games. And I remember a game I called back in, I think it was 2015 or 16, when Hopkins lost at Homewood. It was Greg Kaholin and Ryan Tucker were seemingly shooting from the parking lot and sticking long range goals against Hopkins. So, but what's not uncommon is for a team to get huge advantages. I remember in that game in particular, I think Hopkins had a 3-4 goal lead late and surrendered it. So, but funny things happen when you go to Kloeckner. And again, Hopkins has won, I think, now five in a row at Kloeckner. I'd have to go back and look at the post game notes. But that was a place that the Blue Jays hadn't won until, I think they may have gotten a win under Tony Seaman back in the mid 90s, but then they didn't win again until like the late 2000s, maybe even 2012-ish at Kloeckner. So, and then remember, they've played a couple of NCAA tournament games there in the last 3-5 years, Virginia and Hopkins, two, I think, and two, both have been won by Hopkins. And one was in a blowout fashion. So to see Virginia jump all over Hopkins, you're like, wow, this is just a team that is kind of not ready to play, and Virginia is, and they're excited, and they're emotional, and that's sports, though. It's just when everything seems to be going the wrong way, all you need is, you know, just some type of spark, some type of thing to get you going, and Hopkins was able to get it, and there really wasn't like one defining moment, I don't think, unless you want to point to maybe Hunter Moreland's goal at the end. I think it was the end of the third quarter, if I'm not mistaken, when he off the faceoff and came down and scored. But this is a stunning loss for Virginia, a game that I think this speaks to a couple of things. One, and I don't want to be too harsh on the Wahoos, because you have to give a lot of credit for Hopkins for making plays, but like managing a 7-goal lead, like managing the game. I know you don't want to, and it was a little early for them to go conservative, but I think you, in spots, you just had to maybe milk the clock, take control of the ball, maybe get out of your rhythm, quote unquote. I know that's a little bit of a juxtaposition, but I just feel like Virginia didn't adjust to having a 7-goal lead and take more control of that game, if that makes sense. I don't even know if that makes sense, but it's more kind of like a feel thing.
So Virginia's lost 2 out of 3, and as I mentioned, they will get a break from ACC action again this week, where they'll play Richmond and then resume ACC play the following week. But 5 in a row for the Blue Jays.
That's great, and you're heading into conference play with a huge game that I know we'll talk about a little bit later against the Rutgers Scarlet Knights. But I'll tell you, one thing that sticks out in my mind is a goal that Kyle Maher scored. I believe it was in the third quarter when Hopkins turned that game around. They outscored Virginia 7-2 in the third stanza. And like, you look at the stats, and there's nothing that really – I mean, Virginia had 10 turnovers in the second half. Hopkins had 5. Virginia had 8 turnovers in the first half. Hopkins had 6. So it's not like Virginia was throwing the ball away all that much. A couple failed clears did them in. Faceoffs were 17-32 in favor of Virginia. But that, I thought the first quarter is where they won 6 of 8 faceoffs. That's where they really got their advantage. That's where they really got their mojo and their rhythm. So credit to Hunter Moreland for not only sticking that goal, but taking them off their faceoff rhythm. But that Kyle Maher goal in the third quarter, I think it was an EMO goal, and he caught it at his shoelaces, and he just ripped it. It was an elevator, you know, from low to high, and that was just a blast. I mean, that was just I haven't seen a shot that hard from a Hopkins player in a long time, other than Ryan Brown, which has been, what, 3 years now. Yeah. So I guess that constitutes a long time. So that was pretty cool. But, yeah, Hopkins gone from 2-3 now to 7-3. Up to what, 5-6 in the poll? We'll talk about the polls later, but they're playing good lacrosse right now.
Syracuse is another team that went on the road, and had a comeback in a really back and forth game, a really fun game to watch. Syracuse gets a 15-14 win over Duke. There were times when it looked like Syracuse had the game locked up. There were times when it looked like Duke had the game locked up. There was a key play at the end of the game where Fowler makes a great save. Mm-hmm. sends it the other way, and Duke ties it up 14-14. And then Jamie Tremboli comes down, rips the game winner with about a minute left, and they get out of Durham with a key ACC win.
Deja vu if you're a Duke fan, because guess who scored the game winner last year against the Blue Devils in the Carrier Dome? Jamie Tremboli. So hats off, first of all, to Syracuse. I thought, I honestly thought they were going to get blown out in this game. I thought this had the makings of a contest. I think it was 4 years ago in Durham where it was that weekend where it was just wet and cold and windy and just raw. That was the Hopkins-Carolina game up here in Baltimore, made infamous by the Joey Sankey 90-second, 120-second standing behind the goal and no shot clock or timer on was put on him. So that was that same weekend. And I remember Syracuse went down to Duke and just got blasted by the Blue Devils. I felt like that was going to happen again. I'm like Baba Booey with my I can't clear my throat. I'm like constantly trying to clear my throat, feeling like Baba Booey. But I thought this had all the makings of a Duke blowout. So credit to Syracuse, 7-7 at half, and then like you said, Syracuse. This is like the proverbial just making one more play, and that's what Syracuse did. They were able to get this game, you know, in a position to win. The biggest thing that stood out for me was Nick Mellon, the defensive Nick Mellon, and he's somebody I think who's been forgotten. Sensational freshman season, missed what would have been a sophomore campaign last year with a shoulder injury. Now he's back, and that defense has not been great as a team, but I think individually he's been pretty good. The whole Justin Gutterding at home to 1-2, 1 goal and 2 assists. Great defensive effort by Nick Mellon.
On the other side, this is the most goals Duke's given up all season. Kyle and Dan Abram were talking about Duke's defense. Individually, they have a couple of huge standouts in JT Giles Harris and Cade Van Raphorst. But as a team, is their defense as solid as people think it is?
Yeah, I had them against Towson where they beat the Tigers by 2, up 7-2 at half, and then Towson made a game by switching into a zone defense and really threw the Duke Blue Devils off. And when I felt like Duke started taking more chances in the first half of that game, they were physically dominant over Towson, winning their matchups and really just almost treating the Towson attackers offensively like ragdolls. I mean, just physically winning their matchups and dominating. And I think individually they can do that, but when you make Duke play team defense, I think that's where they can struggle. So I think that's a good point that those two jabronis make with respect to the team defense versus the one-on-one. You know, get the ball spinning off the dodge, look for the slide, make the one more. And I thought Syracuse did a tremendous job of that.
Finally, last game I wanted to get your takeaway or really examine is a big upset of the weekend. Bucknell beats Loyola. There's another road team, had a great showing, 12-11. It was 8-8 in the third quarter. Bucknell broke that tie with 4 straight goals, and Loyola was unable to match that. They get a 12-11 win. And another offensive standout, Pat Spencer, like Gutterding, held to 1 goal and 2 assists by the Bucknell Bison D.
This season has been unusual. I don't know if I want to use the word crazy, but I'll say unusual. And how about the Patriot League in particular? I mean, Army was a darling in the beginning of the season, and they lost to Colgate this past weekend. Lehigh beats, wins a couple, beats Army, hangs with Rutgers. They lose this weekend in Navy. All of a sudden, you're looking at Navy's got one loss in the Patriot League, a team that was really almost forgotten. And Loyola smoked the Midshipmen the week prior with Pat Spencer just going off and having an incredible game. So hats off to the Bison. Will Sands is a terrific player that not a lot of people give a lot of credit to or give a lot of recognition to. He was 1-4 in this game, a goal and 4 assists.
What a great passer.
He's a terrific passer, but he's also a guy that if you play off of him and expect him to make all those feeds and things, he can burn you. You know, he can really do some do some special things. He's a complete player, you know, is I guess is what I'm trying to say. This is where I think Bucknell showed one of Loyola's main weaknesses, and that's the faceoff. The faceoff for the Greyhounds is inconsistent, and the Bison won 6 out of 7 faceoffs in the third quarter, and that was where the game turned. That's where it was a 6-6 game at half, and Bucknell was able to win 6 of 7 faceoffs in the fourth quarter, and then they outscored the Greyhounds 4-2 in that third period. That was a difference in the game. You know, it was a 1-goal victory by Loyola, but that 2-goal cushion was where the Bison really made the difference and did just such a great job. And it was Jarrett Witzel is the faceoff guy for Bucknell, really controlled things. And I think, you know, the learn here is Bucknell's a pretty good team, and Will Sands is outstanding. I mean, he's an All-American candidate, probably looking at like a third team or HM. You know, with all the other bigger names that are out there. But if Sands continues to play at the level that he is, he could go higher. But again, this is more of a pointing out of a weakness of Loyola, and that's inconsistency at the faceoff.
Is there a more fun league than Patriot League this season? First of all, they have 9 teams. So that makes there is depth in it. It's not, you know, like the ACC.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't even get an automatic qualifier because it only has 5 schools in it. But there's 3 teams that are 4-1, Lehigh, Bucknell, and Navy. Loyola is technically in second place, but really fourth team right mm-hmm. now at 3-1. Colgate and Army are 2-2. Any of those 6 teams, they're all, if you told me they were in the NCAA tournament right now, I wouldn't budge on those. I'd say, oh, yeah, it sounds about right. All those teams could make the tournament. Not so sure about BU, Holy Cross, and Lafayette, but those other 6 teams.
Yeah.
Tournament caliber teams. Well, I mean, the rest of the season will play out, and we'll see who really makes it. But this is a league that is often a one bid league.
Yeah,
but it's a fun race.
It is, and I always equate the Patriot League to what is that? The NFC North, the black and blue division of the NFL.
Green Bay, Minnesota,
Detroit, and Chicago. These games are always competitive. Always, they can be low scoring. Very physical, and typically, you know, 1-2 goal games. And that used to be a little bit characteristic of the Ivy. And we'll talk about the Ivies as we move on. But, I mean, the Ivies is like blowout after blowout every weekend in 2018. So this is a fun league. It's a different brand of lacrosse. It's a little bit more measured. It's a lot more 6-on-6. But you've got guys like Pat Spencer. You've got Will Sands that are just terrific. Craig Chick from Lehigh is a terrific defender that doesn't get the recognition that he deserves. You know, Navy, Grayson Terrain is a terrific athletic midfielder. And Casey Reese obviously coming off that knee injury. then you got Army. You know, David Sims made a name for himself last season as having a nice 2018. So they've got some star power. It's just, when you sit there and you whoop up on each other every week like that, it's like, okay, you win, then you win, then you win. It's hard to try to be like, okay, who can I rank? I mean, obviously, I think Loyola is still the highest ranked of the bunch, but, you know, they're like on a yo-yo, you know, top 10 out of top 10, top 10 mm-hmm. out of top 10. And but, yeah, you're right. It is a very fun league.
Dix, here's something I know you're going to be excited about. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
We got another shipment of Trimino coming to the office.
What?
Soon. It might even be addressed to Mark Dixon.
All right. There's nothing wrong with
inside lacrosse offices.
I guess it's there's good news and there's bad news. The good news is it's on its way. The bad news, it's not here when I'm here.
Yeah, I know, but it'll be here. That's because you came a day early today.
Okay.
But you know what else? There's some exciting news. You told me that you found Trimino in your local Giant supermarket.
I did. Yeah. Last week I was in Giant and I saw it. It was like, I can't remember if it was 2 for $5 or 3 for $5.
It's a great deal.
Either way, it's a good deal.
That's 3 workouts right there. Because Trimino is protein-infused water, has 7 grams of whey protein and essential B vitamins to fuel your game. No sugars, no carbs, and only 28 calories. Trimino is ideal before, during, or after your podcast or workout or game.
We do expend a ton of energy doing this podcast.
Sure do. And it tastes great. It comes in 7 delicious flavors, including 3 new flavors, citrus, orchard, and raspberry limeade. You can grab one at CVS, at Giant, your local supermarket. Check it out in your...
Well, you said CVS is a place, right?
CVS, your local supermarket, okay. Or on Amazon.com.
Oh, I thought you were naming supermarkets by names.
I know, you can always get it. Trimino increases energy and endurance and even curbs your appetite so you can play hard, not hungry. Protein has never tasted so good. All right, Dix, let's quickly go through a few other notable results.
This is always a very physical podcast. You need a Trimino for it because it's like you walk in, but you limp out. You know, it's that kind of podcast.
It's like a Patriot League.
It's like a Patriot League game. Yeah. You're whooped.
Well, let's move over to the Ivy League. Yale, most considered to be the preseason favorite in the Ivy League, 16-8 win over Princeton, gets their first Ivy League win of the season. It gets off on the right foot. Big games from the usual suspects.
And let's throw Cornell and Penn in here as well. Cornell 20, Penn 13. In a game that was close in the third quarter between the Big Red and the Quakers, and then Cornell just stepped on the gas and made some plays and got some significant distance. I think what strikes me is you know, you want to talk about the Patriot League being up and down. The Ivies are up and down, and not like in a very cerebral sense. It's Penn goes to Princeton and blitzes the Tigers.
14-7.
Then they turn around and go to Cornell, and they get routed by 7 goals.
I think that was at Penn.
It was at Penn. Okay. Yeah. At Penn. So, but again, it was like, I mean, maybe the score is not as bad, or the final score is not as bad as it might indicate.
But
the Ivy League used to be
the games aren't close.
Yeah, 1-goal game, overtime game, 2-goal game, and now it's just there's beatdowns on a weekly basis. So it's a really difficult league to figure out. Other than the fact that I really truly believe that Yale is the best team, and I think Yale getting healthy defensively, they're getting better goaltending, more consistent. That was the missing piece. And also Ben Reeves is getting some support on the offensive end. Guys like Jackson Morrill have really stepped up the last couple weeks with good performances. So Yale is a very, very talented team, very well-coached team, a very dangerous team.
Cornell cracks our top 20 this week for the first time this
big
season.
Big time. Didn't they go up to like 13 or 14?
Yeah, they moved.
14?
They got a couple of really good offensive performances, 2 8-point performances, one from Jeff Teed, who had 6 goals, 2 assists, and McCullough had 5 goals and 3 assists, so I wanted to make sure we noted those.
Mm-hmm.
A game we're watching out here in the newsroom on replay before we started here, Notre Dame 9, Ohio State 8. Notre Dame coming off of a loss to Michigan.
Yeah.
Michigan's biggest win ever, probably, program history.
First win over
midweek.
First win over a ranked opponent was last year when Penn came out to Ann Arbor and the Wolverines upset them early in the season. This Michigan team, first ever win over a top 5 team, and then obviously on the road as well. So congratulations to Kevin Connery and the Wolverines on that. That was a really fun. I was watching that game on the, I guess it was ACC Extra. That game was, and Notre Dame has a history of the one that I remember vividly was Detroit Mercy.
Oh, yeah.
Was out there in the NCAA tournament first round game a couple years ago. I did that game with Matt Ward, and Detroit was up for 3 quarters, and then Notre Dame went to a 10-man and got back in the game, and not only got back in the game but won it. But what I'm saying is Notre Dame has a history of having lesser opponents come in. Richmond this year was they were up 6-0 at half, and then Richmond scored 6 or 7 goals to open the third quarter, and Notre Dame still came back and won that game. So you kind of had this feeling like, all right, when's the other shoe going to drop? When are they going to start closing this out and beat Michigan? And it never happened. You know, so credit the Wolverines. But nice rebound win. You go into the shoe where the Buckeyes love to play, and that's a team that's lost 3 out of the last 4, now 4 out of the last 5 for the Buckeyes. But I thought Ohio State, I was feeling like Ohio State had them right where they wanted them. You know, a close game, possessions were at a premium, but in credit Notre Dame. It was like a 6-minute stretch where they just broke that game open in the fourth quarter against the Buckeyes to get the victory. I thought Roderick Garnsey was really good in that game, and they got good goaltending, something they did not get in the game against Michigan. And John Travisano was excellent at the faceoff dot. Just dominated the faceoffs. I think he only lost 2 or 3 faceoffs that whole game. So wonderful job by Notre Dame to get that win.
Out in Denver, the number 5 Pioneers eked out an 11-10 win over Towson. Towson is a tough out, man. They just they slug it out with everybody. And Ethan Walker with 5 goals and assists in that game, and Trevor Baptiste was his usual self. I think he was 21 of 24
in
faceoffs.
Towson, this game I felt I walked away from it more about Towson than Denver. Just because the Pioneers at home, really, really talented team, won some nice games as of late. But this Towson team, as you mentioned, this team is rolling, not rolling in the win column, but they're progressing toward CAA play. Ultimately, you think they're going to be in the CAA tournament, and then ultimately they want to be in the NCAAs. Yeah, they just keep getting better. They're going to be more and more difficult to beat as this team continues to come together and gel. So much to the point that I put Towson back in my top 20 this week. I think I've got him in that 19 or 20 slot just because I feel like they deserve it. I mean, playing Duke so tight and then now playing Denver to overtime, and this was a game that it looked like it could have ended at the end of regulation with a goal that was disallowed.
Yeah, it looked like
ultimately.
Denver scored a winning goal.
Yeah, but it wasn't allowed, so they went to the overtime frame, and Denver ended it in the first overtime. But I just, this Towson team is just really impresses me, especially lately with these tough losses. A little bit foolish to put them in the top 20, maybe. But when I look at the bottom 20, the 15 through 20, I'm like, put wins and losses aside, which I know is hard because it is about wins and losses in the top 20. But I'm thinking of those teams that I might place 15 through 20. Are they better than Towson? I'm not sure. I'm not so sure the answer is yes. So I think that's why I put Towson in my, 19 or 20 is where I put the Tigers.
We'll find out a lot about Towson this Saturday when they head up to the island to play old-time nemesis Hofstra in the first CAA game of the year.
That's interesting because last year that was the last CAA regular season game in conference play. Now they're putting them up front, so that'll be interesting.
Hofstra got lost to St. John's.
St. John's by a goal. Yeah, they is that two in a row for Hofstra that they've lost? They beat Carolina. They whooped Carolina up on the island. And I want to say that's two losses in a row.
Yeah, they lost to Lehigh
13-8. Yeah, there you go.
And then they lost to St. John's. So that'll be an interesting game, an important game for both of those teams as they start CAA play.
Yep.
One more game I want your opinion on, Dix, is the number two Maryland Terrapins got a 11-7 win over former number 20 UNC. Your man Connor Kelly had four goals.
my man.
You love this kid.
I think he's a very, very good player.
Sure.
And I don't know if I like your tone, though.
I meant that in
saying
as a positive. he's a heck of a player. And Jared Bernhardt had three goals and one assist. Four straight losses for the Tar Heels.
Yeah. I feel like if you're Carolina, you take some positives away from this game in that the defense played better, against a high-powered Maryland team. Now, do you attribute that to the travel and playing all the way on the time change? But great atmosphere, great crowd. Close to 7,000 people, I believe.
Yeah, Dane Ahburn was out there.
Ahburn was there?
Yeah.
Did he stay?
On assignment.
Or did he come back?
No, we're keeping him out west for this week. He's covering something in Arizona this week.
But he was still able to produce the podcast.
He was.
It's like the old Italian grandmother in the basement with the lasagnas. They just keep coming. You ever seen Sebastian Maniscalco, the comedian?
That's such a good analogy. I don't even know what that came from.
He does a bit on Italian grandmothers. And he said growing up, it was like lasagnas were on an assembly line. The physical comedy of this. Yeah. I mean, his material is outstanding, but his physical, the way he portrays it. So it's just like, he's like, lasagnas just keep coming up on the table and do this and that. I got to imagine my grandmother's down there. And he's like, he's pretending that the grandmother's like putting lasagna in the oven, opening the oven, whipping it upstairs. I feel like that's the way Ahburn is with podcasts. It's just like an old Italian grandmother making lasagna. It's like podcast after podcast after podcast after podcast. It's just like an assembly line. So.
He does one a week, just like us.
Is it only one?
Yeah.
It just seems like he's just around. Like
as far as I know, I think he only does one a week. He might help out with a couple others, but
he does a good job.
So now you got me thinking about lasagnas.
Mm.
Getting together for Easter this weekend.
Oh, yeah?
My sister Tracy, if you're listening to this, I'm sure you are. I know we're going to have a ham and some other good stuff, but
I hate ham.
If you want to make a lasagna, I'm sure everyone will appreciate that. My sister makes the best lasagna.
Hint. God, what is so she? What makes it so good? Does she put
the love, the TLC that goes in?
Instead of putting ground beef, it's maybe like some sausage.
She'll do a little bit of that. It's just so good.
It's so good.
Oh my God.
It's not something I eat very much because it's so rich and really a lot of but I could be up for a piece of lasagna. Right
oh, speaking now. Of, I brought in the corned beef and cabbage after St. Patrick's Day.
Oh, yeah?
But because we couldn't do it because of the weather and everything,
uh-huh.
I had it here on Tuesday when we had normally done it.
You couldn't bring it to my house?
It w- No, I forgot it.
Oh.
I forgot. I was,
you still have it here
when
now?
I was running out. No, we ate it last week. It was good.
Kidding me. We had corned beef and cabbage. We had our own corned beef. Yeah, my parents actually came over on St. Patrick's Day, so we had the corned beef and cabbage that my wife prepared, and then my mother also had some as well. So, you know, it was a fun time.
Good. Are we done with these games?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. The one thing about Maryland, again, and I've been harping on this for the last couple of weeks, just losing the fourth quarter. Maryland lost the fourth quarter to Carolina 3-2. They were up 8-2, and Carolina came back and made it at the end of a Carolina run. So Carolina, it was 8-2, and then Carolina scored 5 out of the next 6 goals to make it 9-7. And then Maryland got a pole goal from Bryce Young to make it 10-7, and Logan Wanauskas closed it out. But, I know some Maryland fans might not make a whole big deal out of this, but I'm just thinking, man, you keep losing these fourth quarters.
Maybe that's what happens when you lose a senior class like they had last year.
Potentially, yeah.
And the ability to close out teams. I mean, it's not like they're not winning these games.
They're winning the games.
But I understand what you're saying.
Well, they lost the Albany game. True. They were up by 5 goals in the fourth quarter to Albany and lost that game at home. So, anyway, that's...
They're talented enough, and they're very well coached. They will find a way to start finishing teams off.
Oh, my God, I got to put this on record. Dan Flynn said something nice about the Maryland Terrapins. Wow.
You know what else? I have someone else I have nice things to say about. Sideline Swap.
Mm-hmm.
Sideline Swap is where lacrosse players buy and sell their gear. You can shop heads, helmets, shafts, and gloves up to 70% off, or snag hard-to-find college gear. And all purchases are backed by Sideline Swap's buyer guarantee. Head to sidelineswap.com. That's SIDELINESWAP.com. Sidelineswap.com, or download the Sideline Swap iPhone app today. All right. Let's look at the new top 10.
Okay.
So the Maverick Media poll is out.
Fresh off the press, hot off the press.
And there are 4 teams that are making their debut.
In the top 10?
In the top 20.
Top 20, okay.
So 4 new teams. So Cornell, coming off of their big win, they moved up to 13th. Michigan had a great week. They're 15th. Bucknell, after their upset of Loyola, is 18. And Harvard slides into the top 20 at number 19.
Mm-hmm.
Now, top 10. Not a lot of movement at the very top. Right. Albany and Maryland stay number 1 and number 2.
Mm-hmm.
And then that mix of Denver, Yale, and Duke kind of the same as it has been to get you through the top 5. This is where you start to see things. The mm-hmm. Blue Jays have moved up to number 6,
mm-hmm.
followed by Notre Dame, Villanova, who just keeps hanging around,
mm-hmm.
Rutgers Scarlet Knights, and the Syracuse Orange back in the top 10 after being 15th last week. Let's see what you have, Dix.
Same 10, just in different order. So Albany number 1, Maryland number 2. I think they've established themselves as the top 2 teams in the country at this juncture.
Do you think Albany is going to run the table?
Yes.
And they have
they still play Yale. They have to play Harvard as well.
No, I don't think so.
Not Harvard. They play Yale. They could lose that game to Yale.
But that's the second to last regular season game of the year. So
yeah.
I'm predicting that they go undefeated until they play Yale.
That's real hard. I mean, come on.
We've seen crazier things.
You're right. You're right. I shouldn't be just that dismissive. But there's nobody in the America East that I see competing with Albany.
Considering they already beat.
No, I shouldn't. I take that back. Not competing with, but beating Albany. But that Yale game is going to be, that's going to be a great game. Albany number 1, Maryland number 2. I've got Yale number 3.
Ooh.
Denver number 4. I've got Hopkins at 5. I felt like I couldn't put Duke, who I have at number 6, over them because Duke lost to Cuse and Hopkins put the smack down on the Orange. Notre Dame is number 7, Rutgers 8, Villanova 9, and then I've got Syracuse at number 10.
So let's get to some games to watch this week, and we'll start with the teams that we were just talking about. Number 6, Johns Hopkins, at number 9, Rutgers on Easter Sunday, and Mark Dixon will be on the call on Big Ten Network.
Easter egg hunt in Piscataway. Myself and Joe Beninati will have the call for you. Really excited about this game. Always excited to start Big Ten play. And now a game that a couple weeks ago may have looked as like, know, two teams kind of sliding, now is a top 10 matchup. And, you know, not, it goes without saying they'll have ramifications toward entry into the Big Ten tournament, but now this has, you know, national ranking landscaping, national ranking landscape type situation, and an ultimately NCAA tournament ramifications.
Yeah, it'll be a good win for whoever gets it.
It will be. And you have to remember that Rutgers beat Hopkins twice 2 years ago and did not get in to the NCAA tournament, so it's hard to say that, you know, okay, yeah, a win over Hopkins will go a long way for Rutgers when two, you know, a couple years ago didn't, but I think that was more, you know, Rutgers had some bad losses that year that weighed them down in terms of the numbers game for the NCAA tournament. But really excited about this game when you talk about, you know, Jules Hennenberg is just having a terrific year for Rutgers. I like the way their defense has been playing the last couple of weeks. And then Johns Hopkins, you know, that come from behind win against Virginia on the road. They show that if they go down, they have the ability to come back. They've got enough scoring. They've got enough playmakers. They've got a good face-off man. And one thing I failed to mention was I was a little surprised how Michael Krause, he got the better of the matchup against Patrick Foley in the Virginia Hopkins game. I was a little surprised by that. Foley, I think, had been really dominant in his matchups, even against Pat Spencer from Loyola. I think this Hopkins defense is good. I think they're very good. And this is going to be a great game. Big Ten Network live Sunday night, Easter Sunday, 7 p.m.
I can't wait to watch it.
Can't wait to call it.
So we have a second Big Ten game in the five to watch this week, and it's not Ohio State and Penn State. It's Maryland at Michigan.
A lot of storylines on this one. You can watch this one on Saturday noon, Big Ten Network. The biggest storyline to me is Kevin Connery, the new head coach at Michigan, taking on his former team, former program, former boss. He knows Maryland as well as anybody knows Maryland. How will he defend Connor Kelly? What wrinkles will he throw at the Terrapins? This is going to be a really, really fun game. When you think about 2 years ago in the big house, I think this will be played at Michigan's new lacrosse facility. But the Kyle Bernlohr one-handed save in the driving snowstorm is seared into my memory. This will be a really, I think this is going to be a really good game. I think it's going to be very competitive. And, you know, obviously John Tillman knows Kevin Connery just as well as Kevin Connery knows John Tillman. So, and J.L. Reppert, for that matter, the offensive coordinator of the Terps. So it's going to be interesting to see those guys strategize against each other.
A week ago, I would have suggested Michigan has a chance to sneak up on Maryland.
No.
But
no,
not after their win at Notre Dame, and not also because it's the first Big Ten game of the year. Maryland will be ready to play.
Yep.
All right, so there's also two ACC games featured in our What to Watch this week. UNC at number 3 Duke, both teams looking to rebound after some tough losses.
Yeah, and again, you're thinking UNC going into Duke, much like Syracuse going into Durham. Is it going to be a blowout? I don't think so. I think this will be a really competitive game. Carolina needs this game. 4 losses in a row, that wears on you when you haven't won in 3 weeks. It becomes, you know, not just a physical component, but really starts to creep into your psyche as well. And, you know, Duke, I feel like this is a Duke February team versus a Duke March team of years
past.
What
do you mean by that?
Like losing games that I don't think they should lose kind of thing. I know it's an in-conference game. I know Syracuse is a very talented team.
It's a big rival.
Yeah. Well, I guess I'm talking more about the Syracuse, you know, rewind versus moving forward.
Did you see Donowski's comment? He said after the first quarter, it seemed like his guys didn't think they could play with Syracuse.
Did he say that? Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
It was obviously a couple of his comments after the game were directed so that his players would hear it.
Absolutely.
And find out about it. And again, try to get those, light a fire under those guys.
It's psyche, you know. Now, I mean, when I'm talking about Carolina maybe being depressed a little bit, you know, Duke's like maybe get him a little fired up. It's funny, you know, I cover the women's game as well, so I know a lot of women's coaches and obviously, you know, the men's game. So it's funny, coaches that have coached both will say when you make a comment to the team, to a women's team, all the women on the team think that you're talking about them. When you make a comment to a men's team, none of the men think you're talking to them. It's kind of funny. It looks like Coach Donowski went out of his way to make sure that those guys knew, hey, I'm talking to you. Yeah. All right.
That's what it seemed like. So that's a big rivalry game. That will be at 5 o'clock on ESPNU on Friday.
Happy Hour Lacrosse.
Happy Hour Lacrosse is back. And then Penn at number 4 Yale is our last game of our five.
Good Friday. Good Friday Lacrosse.
Yeah.
Good Friday Happy Hour. Will people be at stations of Lacrosse while that game's going on?
Penn at number 4 Yale. So Penn looking to bounce back.
I thought you said two ACC games.
So oh, yeah.
Duke, UNC, what was the second one?
No, you're right. Number 7, Notre Dame at number 10, Syracuse.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, big game. That game's That's in a dome, right?
Yeah, it's in a dome.
So that'll be, you know, Notre Dame, nice rebound win against Ohio State after dropping a game to Michigan, and obviously Syracuse has to be feeling good about themselves. But beware. And could Notre Dame blow them out? No. I like Notre Dame's offense a lot. Again, the formula for Notre Dame is get good faceoffs. You know, 50-50 at the dot and get decent goaltending. I think they can beat anybody. The reason I think I say that is because Syracuse has been blown out twice in the dome this year by Albany and Hopkins, respectively.
I don't see this Notre Dame team blowing anybody out.
But I'm just saying both.
Just looking at their scores, they're all like one or two, three goal games.
Both at times where Syracuse is the underdog. And I don't even know if you could characterize them as an underdog when Hopkins came rolling in there. But they were definitely the underdog against the Dane train. And two blowouts happened that people didn't think were going to happen. So could this be a blowout this weekend, Notre Dame-Syracuse?
I think it'll be a lot closer than that. And then finally, do you want to talk about
this
Penn-Yale game or not?
Yeah, why not?
Okay, so Penn is playing at number 4 Yale. Again, the Quakers need to rebound from a home game that they probably thought they were going to get when the schedule first came out. And then they have to go up to Yale to play a red-hot Yale Bulldogs team.
Yeah, face-offs, Connor Mackey is terrific for Yale. He was sublime against Princeton, a big reason why they could get the ball so much and put up so many goals. Penn's going to have the work cut out for him because if Mackey can get hot, can Penn, they struggled to keep Cornell's offense under wraps, and I think the Yale offense is even better than the Big Reds. So face-offs will be critical in this game. Possession, tempo, all that good stuff.
So, Dixon, our listener call-in for this week, Billy from Towson calls in to correct me on my Quinnipiac pronunciation.
Yeah, you were saying it all kinds of different ways last week.
Yeah, so he
said, but you were having fun with it. You weren't being serious.
Yeah, I wasn't being serious. Yeah. I was just saying it the way I've heard it. So let's hear this call from Billy.
Hello, this is Billy Vic Owens calling from Towson, Maryland, and I'm responding to the D-Fly and Dixie podcast. I just want to let you know, as a native of Connecticut, proper pronunciation is Quinnipiac. They've got good college hockey as well, and you sometimes hear them mentioned in media polling because they do that. But it's Quinnipiac. There's only one pronunciation. All right, guys, good listening to the podcast. Go get it.
All right, so Billy has set the record straight. I believe it's Quinnipiac.
Yeah, that's what it sounded like.
Quinnipiac.
Yeah.
And they also have good hockey up there.
Yeah. Now, maybe Billy can call back in and help me. And I know the coach because I've officiated games before for the Bobcats. If he can help me with the pronunciation of the head coach, Eric Fachetti. I'm being facetious, but no, that's one that you struggle with. And Eric's been there for a number of years. And I remember when the Bobcats went to the NCAA tournament a couple years ago. They had the whatever they call those. I don't think they're called. Are they called playing games? They played Hartford.
And, the NCAA probably wants to call them first round games.
First round games. Okay, really gotcha. Not. Yeah. So they do a nice job up there. It's a good program. But yeah, I don't know if Billy set the record straight. He set you straight. I like it. He set you straight.
Quinnipiac.
There you go.
All right, I say that right?
I'm just going to keep saying
Hey, thanks for calling.
I'm just going to keep saying Bobcats.
We love to hear from you guys. So call in with your rant, your comments, your correction. Let us know what you think. Call in with your questions. 443-595-7020. 443-595-7020. And be sure to leave your name and where you're calling from. All right, Dix. Before we go, it's time for our weekly give and go.
What do you got this week?
This is a simple one.
Oh, yeah? I'll be the judge of that.
Favorite Easter candy.
Oh, okay.
All right.
I can do that.
If any of you are unfamiliar with how we
you
do this,
love the
that
peeps.
Is, I hate them.
They are nasty.
I've said I don't like marshmallows. The only time I like marshmallows is in cereal, like Lucky Charms. Like, I can eat them in the cereal, the little hardened ones
yeah.
that kind of soften up.
Okay.
But I really don't like marshmallows.
No.
I don't like roasted marshmallows. I don't. It's too much sugar. It's gross.
Yeah.
And
you've never had. Have you ever had? Have you ever had a legit marshmallow donut? Growing up, Catonsville Bakery.
Uh huh.
Oh man! After church on Sundays, go to the Catonsville Bakery and one of the donuts.
Marshmallow
you get.
Donut.
Marshmallow donuts, and I think so.
See, I like the white cream in a donut.
What? There's white cream?
Yeah,
what?
There's a chocolate cream. There's a Boston cream.
Right. But
which
that
is the yellow stuff.
Yeah, it's yellow.
It's like a custard almost.
Right?
And then there's the cream. So it could be colored chocolate or it could be vanilla. Vanilla cream donut is what I'm talking about.
Well, like...
Love that. But a marshmallow. I've never had a marshmallow.
I mean, I don't want to name names, but like if you go to the bigger franchises, get a marshmallow donut, it's nasty. Because it's like... It's not fluffy marshmallow. It's granulated sugar and it was nasty. Canesville Bakery growing up, and now the Fenwick Bakery in Baltimore has real legit marshmallow donuts. Canesville Bakery closed.
I still don't know
ago.
If I could bring myself to get a marshmallow donut with all of the options at a bakery.
I tell
like
you
that.
What, if you go to the Fenwick Bakery for whatever reason and you're getting donuts, shoot the lock off your wallet. I don't know what they cost, $1.25, maybe a buck. Get yourself a marshmallow donut.
Okay.
Get like a half dozen for the family. Get a dozen for the family, and one of which get a marshmallow donut and just try it and let me know what you think. You may not like it.
The Flynn's are donut people. That's a after church, get some donuts kind of thing.
Oh, yeah.
That's our move. But let's get back to
Easter candy.
Easter candy.
Easter
all right,
candy.
So I'll give
so
you.
So I hate Peeps too,
yeah,
for the record.
They're just gross. I'll give you my three favorite. And then you can
three. Okay.
say yours. And again, you don't have to. You can say, you can agree with me and
right.
say, okay. But I'm going to rank these in order too. Love a white chocolate bunny. For some reason, when I was a kid, I must have told people, I'm one of six kids. So
yeah.
I would say, I said I'd like white chocolate.
Mm-hmm.
And I did. I still do.
Is that because you like to be called white chocolate?
Yeah,
like
the basketball
Jason
court.
Williams? Yeah, yeah. Messed around and got a triple-double.
But I... would get, for some reason, I would be given that. Everyone else would get the regular chocolate. I'd get the white chocolate. And I really did love it.
Did it?
And I don't get it that much anymore. So
was that on purpose? Your
I
favorite?
Guess. Maybe I wanted it to be different or something when you're one
God.
Of six kids or something like that. But I loved to get the white chocolate bunny. It was
okay.
Cadbury eggs, number two. You can't eat a lot of them.
Yeah.
But you can eat a couple of them.
Yeah.
And just one every once in a while.
I've taken a liking more to the caramel Cadbury eggs versus the original with the fake...
Like cream in it.
The cream with
it's
the...
It's good, though.
Okay. Yeah, like, okay, I got
it. And then number three, jelly beans.
Yeah.
I love good jelly beans.
Yeah. The jelly beans that my kids love, and theretofore, I'll have to sample some, mm-hmm. are the Starburst jelly beans.
Ooh, yeah.
You ever had Starburst jelly
I have.
Beans?
I have. Yeah, they're good.
Yeah.
Now, I don't like the black ones, the licorice-y ones.
I don't think Starburst makes those.
But I really like jelly beans. Like I don't eat a lot of candy. I'll eat chocolate once in a while.
Right.
But when it comes to Easter candy, you know, you got to indulge a little bit.
Sure.
That's what it's about.
Okay.
So how about you? What do you...
I like the jelly beans, the Starburst jelly beans in particular. But really, for me, it's one thing and one thing only. And it's the Reese's peanut butter eggs. Reese's chocolate eggs.
They're so good.
But you know what?
Yeah, they're really good.
It's transferable because at Halloween,
just
they're the pumpkins.
Peanut butter cup.
And then at Easter, they're the eggs. Yeah. And then I'm sure for, you know, Christmas, it's a wreath or something like that. But, oh, my God, they're so good. And you can do them, room temperature or freeze them.
Oh,
either way.
I like them better cold.
Either way. The only problem is when you freeze them, they can be tough to bite into.
You know what might be the greatest thing about the Reese's peanut butter cup type things? Is they put the exact right amount of the ratio of peanut butter to chocolate is spot on.
Well, the egg is, it's like the peanut butter is so dense. And it's, oh man, I can't describe
because
it.
You can get like non-Reese's peanut butter
yeah.
cups that there's too much peanut butter.
Right.
Or not enough chocolate or
yeah,
the way around.
Yeah, yeah.
But they're, to the ratio.
Reese's has it down to a science.
They're good at that.
Yeah. And I'm not, I mean, I've always liked Reese's peanut butter cups. Not a huge Reese's Pieces fan.
No, me neither.
But it's just the surface area of the chocolate and the peanut butter and the it's very, very good.
Okay.
Very good.
I think that's two.
Yeah, and I think growing up, my mom always gets like Rebs candies. It's a Baltimore thing. Rebs are pretty good. But that's like you go over and you have one, out of the box or something like that.
How are you with the grass, the fake grass in the Easter basket?
Well, my kids are older now, so they probably will not get an Easter basket.
Uh-huh.
But you got to do the fake grass.
Yeah,
But there's varieties. So you have like the cellophane kind, and if you do Peeps, because you just do Peeps for decoration, like the Peeps get stuck in it, and it's just nasty. I know my in-laws, when they would do Easter baskets for the kids, have like the grass, but it's like a paper type.
That's the high end. Martha Stewart type of Easter grass. So I'm a cellophane guy.
That doesn't... Oh, you're
kidding picking
me?
Like the jelly. You're like, where's the jelly? Oh, there's some down there.
Well, and the cellophane, like I know we just take the... We make the basket, and then once the basket's done, like you take that cellophane grass and you put it right back in the package, and you get it right back out for the next Easter, man.
Yeah, because that stuff it never leaves your house.
No,
even if you try to throw it away, it'll like crawl back out of the trash can. Yeah, kitchen counter.
It takes on a life of its own, and it has adhesive qualities to it because of the marshmallow from the Peeps, and it'll just like attach it. Attach itself like an evil host.
Peeps, they're so gross.
Peeps are nasty.
Peeps and I think at Halloween, candy corn, it's just the worst thing.
Yeah, candy corn does
suck. So like
suck.
The two like candies associated with each of those holidays, it's not for me.
But if you have a little hankering for sugar or something and there's a bag of candy corn, you might grab one or two.
No, I won't.
You won't grab any.
No.
You'll go
I'll just
without.
I'll go get some sugar and just spoon it right down
my throat.
I was
going to say, you'll just take a teaspoon and just put it right in the Domino package and suck it right down. Good for you.
How do you fall on the Easter egg, the hard-boiled colored egg, dyed Easter eggs?
Never eat them. Used to, dye them. We still might dye this year, dye the Easter eggs.
I want to dye eggs with my kids. They just couldn't handle. They're 4 and 2. They wouldn't be able to.
Sure. Well,
my daughter might be able to handle that.
It's like carving the pumpkin. You know, you do it early on, and then you hopefully, when they become of a competent age, you hand it over to them to do. Kind of thing. Kind of like decorating the tree in our house.
Do you remember seeing those like eggs that, on the front of the Easter egg dye kit or whatever?
Oh, they're absolutely gorgeous. And
Or they give you that little spoon thing.
Oh, the spoon sucks.
That you're supposed to be able to make a perfect line.
Oh.
And it turns out to be just like brown or purple.
Exactly. And look, okay, so hard boiling the eggs is tough too because they can crack under extreme temperature. And then when you're placing it into the cup or whatever, you can't be too rough with it because it could crack then when you put it in. So inevitable, and then your fingers get the dye on it and all that kind of nonsense. I think
it's convinced me not to do it.
With the boys, we'll do like if you want to do red, white, and blue, so you like put one in red and then flip it over once that's dry and put it in the blue.
Right.
That's as fancy as it gets in the Dixon household. There's no like stenciling. There's no those fakakta crayons that they put in there.
Or the people who poke a hole in it, drain the egg out they have the
perfect... They got way too much time on their hands. And I would actually take a carton of those eggs and whip them at their house if possible. Like that's just... there's some people that I guess are really, really good at, it's like those nudnigs that do the super intricate pumpkins and stuff like that.
Yeah, I know one of those guys. He's really good at it. Ryan Rabideau.
Rabideau? I can see him.
He's an expert pumpkin carver.
No kid. I can totally see that, too.
The Baltimore Sun, took pictures of the pumpkin he carved a couple years ago.
Really?
Yeah.
Was it an inside lacrosse pumpkin?
No, I think it was a Ravens theme or something.
Did he used to do IL pumpkins?
I think he did an IL pumpkin once.
That's neat.
He's got a talent for that. I wonder what his Easter egg skills are.
You should ask him. If he's listening to this podcast, maybe he can call in.
Call in, Rabs.
Yeah.
With your let me know about your Easter egg dye.
Give us and send us tweet us a picture or something like that.
And I would be remiss, Dix, if we didn't mention our Jewish friends. Happy Passover.
There you go.
And for all of you, have a great Easter. If you like what you heard, I don't know how you could have not liked it. See what I did there? Go ahead and subscribe and tell a friend. Leave a rating on iTunes. And be sure to listen next week. You can reach out to us on Twitter @DixonLacrosse or You can reach me at D_Fly, F-L-Y, or via email at dflynn@insidelacrosse.com. And don't forget, call in with your rant, your comments, your questions at 443-595-7020 and leave us a message. Again, that number is 443-595-7020. If you've gotten this far in the podcast, we know you're a loyal listener. Give us a call. We want to hear from you. Be sure to leave your name and where you're calling from so we can give you a shout out. Also, don't forget to check out our other podcasts. We drop a new one every weekday during the season. Have a great week and enjoy the games.